Hey Phil, how are you, buddy? You well?
Sitting on a rainbow, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, mate. Considering it's 11 p.m. over here, I'm still, I'm probably more sprightly than I should be, to be perfectly honest with you.
Where are
Good to
you at
see you.
today?
I'm in the UK, mate. Nottingham in the UK, so it's pretty central. So yeah, I'm here at the moment. How about
It's
yourself?
cool.
Where
So
are you,
did you see?
buddy?
Oh, I'm in Austin, Texas. Did you see
Austin.
the England game?
Yeah, I watched it with my son earlier on, mate. It was a good game. Good game. I've not managed to catch a lot of the games of the World Cup just simply because obviously here they start about 9 p.m. Well, 8, 9 p.m. And then the second and third games are kind of like midnight,
Yeah.
and then 1 a.m., 3 a.m. So I've seen a couple of games. And the England game was 5 p.m. here, so I managed to catch it today. It's a good result. You boys are playing a little bit later on as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. We're playing in a couple hours.
Yeah,
So I'll
are you
miss
gonna?
most of the game. I mean, I go to bed at like 8:30 too.
Yeah. I'd love to say I'm
Every
like that
night,
just
eight thirty up
myself.
at 4:30, you know.
Well, you passed the test. You passed the first test anyway, Phil, because I'm going to be talking about bedtimes tonight. So the fact that you've already confirmed you've passed the first test of the day.
Yay! I got that going for me.
Yeah, no, but great to see you here, mate. Hey, TK. Hey, Sean. How are you, boys? You okay?
You can't see me here. It's not 11 p.m.
Yeah, I was just. I won't tell Gav, TK. I promise. I promise. He knows you come out. This is the only time we will allow you to be up at this time of night, mate. You know that. And only when myself or Gav are on. Don't worry about Greg's calls. Just only when me and Gav are on. Hey, Paul. How are you, buddy? You well?
Perfectly fine.
Good, good. Well, great to see you all here. We'll just give it another minute or so and then we'll get started. How's everybody's week? So, what are we? 1st of July. How's everybody been kind of first? I know we spoke about goals last week, but how's everybody's week been? Obviously, TK, I know we've had a bit of a heat wave for once here in the UK, which was nice. It's certainly what, well, it disappeared very quickly. It's been cold again, but I have, before you ask, I haven't been on holiday since you last saw me. It's literally, we had a little bit of sun here in the UK, but I hope everybody's week's been good. So today, obviously the title of today is kind of killing decision fatigue. So as you guys know, what I like to do is kind of give you a bit of the science behind it. So for those of you guys that haven't heard me speak before, obviously I've not seen Phil on my calls before. Sean, I spoke to last week, but how I kind of run my calls, guys, for those of you that haven't been here before, is I like to run slides. So for me, kind of just giving you a little bit of concept and an understanding around most of the mental and the psychological aspects of what we do. So I'm big into the psychology and the mental side, as well as obviously all the exercise science and just understanding kind of normal human mechanisms of kind of what bleeds into decisions, because it's not giving you a kind of get out of free jail card, but ultimately it gives you an understanding of how important the psychological aspect of what we do in this process is. And just with a lot of the stuff that I talk about, I will base it around kind of nutrition and training primarily, but kind of for me, it's understanding how it kind of bleeds into other areas of life as well. So it kind of gives you an understanding, because for me, kind of as a coach and being in the industry for 20 years, I often say to people, like, people don't decide to get unhealthy. They don't decide to get fat. They don't, if they had a choice, they wouldn't be in the position where they have to see us and kind of any sort of personal trainers. So it's having an understanding how emotions, thoughts, and those sort of things kind of essentially kind of play into this. Hey Rob, hope you are, buddy. So kind of for me, just having a giving you guys a an understanding allows us to deal with things a little bit better. So for me, it's all about kind of, there's no such thing as negatives. There's no such thing as bad. There's progress and an understanding of what around why something has happened, and kind of understanding the strategies or the operating systems that we have to put in place to kind of curtail that or start to move things in the opposite direction. So as always, guys, kind of just going to load my slides up now. So if you just give me a second. So it's that one. So can you guys see that all okay? I've managed to become technically astute now where I can actually see you guys on the right-hand side of my screen. Typically, I can't see any of your guys' faces because I'm not that savvy with tech, but I've managed to see you guys, so I can see you guys. And for those of you guys that are listening for the first time, as always, if you have any questions, don't wait to... Yes, I will ask if you've got any questions at the end, but ultimately, kind of, just unmute yourself because it's a small kind of room and we've got only a few people in here. Feel free to ask questions as I run through. If you want me to elaborate a little bit more on anything, then just let me know as well. So kind of just starting off by understanding kind of decision fatigue. Okay, so I'll put a little question at the top there. And this can apply to anything really, but have you ever spent all day making great choices only to find yourself eating a takeaway or kind of, I call it non-congruent food. I don't believe in cheat meals. There's food that's congruent to your goal and food that's non-congruent or conducive. And kind of skipping the gym. Okay. I believe that kind of decision fatigue essentially refers, and an analogy for it refers to the deterioration of in your ability to make quality decisions, especially after prolonged periods of making choices or kind of under high periods of stress, which those of you guys that obviously work, have families, are going to be, and those of you that have heard previous calls around stress exists all the time. So kind of that decision fatigue refers to kind of when we're constantly having to make a choice. So the reality of the situation is every decision we make requires attention, things like working memory, emotional regulation, cognitive control, and also things like future consequence evaluation. So in regards to the science behind that, most of these functions are typically going to be managed by the area of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. So again, from previous calls, just as a little reminder, kind of the prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that's responsible for things like planning, self-control, delayed gratification, and then goal-directed behavior. So kind of there is actually a kind of process within the brain and a biological process that your body goes through when making decisions. So understanding the brain is a large part of kind of understanding how decision fatigue kind of actually accumulates and happens. Okay, so I had a look through some old research, and kind of it was a psychologist that I'd studied on. I'd done a lot of research around kind of psychology and decision making a long time ago. His name's Roy Baumeister. And what he did a lot of research on is just understanding kind of repeated decision making. And what he came up with is ultimately kind of repeat having to make decisions time and time again across the course of a day. It typically reduces our ability to resist temptation. Most importantly, I feel delay gratification, kind of regulate your emotions, things like maintain discipline and think long term, because we're constantly having to kind of go through that rigmarole of making decisions. So kind of everything today is about kind of reducing that. And those of you guys that have heard me speak before is I believe my role as a coach or kind of as an educator is to, with my clients, to let them do as little thinking as possible. You've got enough thinking to do when it comes to your personal life, your professional life, to have to think about the physical realm. So what I say to all my guys when they start is my goal is to strategize and create a plan where it takes the thinking out of it. You have an understanding of the whys and the whats and an understanding from a buying perspective, but taking that thinking out of it to reduce the amount of decisions you're going to have to make in the process, which potentially could go south if there is too many to make. And some of the research that I was reading, which was kind of new to me, obviously before the call, is a lot of the research now is showing that kind of in regards to real world examples. Okay. I forget who wrote this. I was reading it yesterday, but kind of things like judges grant parole less frequently later on in the day. Medical professionals prescribe default medications more often when fatigued or under long periods of stress. And things like consumers make poorer financial decisions after multiple choices. So even in alternate industries and fields, it's an example of kind of decision. The more decisions we have to make, the less we can rely on self-control and discipline, because the more, I love the analogy kind of the never go shopping when you're hungry, right? I make sure I never go shopping when I'm hungry, because it's not that I choose to have something non-congruent into my shopping cart, but the likelihood of that happening if I'm tired, if I'm hungry, is going to significantly increase. So it's just understanding that kind of we're trying to reduce as much decision making as possible. And the application of that to health is typically as an average human, we have around about 20 to 30,000 internal dialogues a day, but of those, we typically have to make around about 200 food-related decisions daily. We have to make hundreds of lifestyle choices within that 20 to 30,000 internal dialogues, dozens of self-regulation decisions. So for me, the problem isn't lack of knowledge. And as I've said in previous kind of talks, we all know what to do. It's actually the application. And kind of what I believe is with all this decision making, they just become an element of cognitive exhaustion, which just impairs that ability to make decisions. So kind of, as we've said, the key takeaway from this slide is success is very rarely a knowledge problem. It's always a decision management problem, and not overwhelming yourself with multiple decisions to be had and made throughout the day. Okay, it's because typically our brain is designed to conserve energy. Okay, so kind of historically and evolutionary, our human brain evolved during periods of food scarcity, physical danger, and it kind of taught us to preserve energy, right? So back in the day, and I'm talking kind of hundreds and thousands of years ago, the primary goal was survival. It wasn't body composition. It wasn't longevity or peak performance. So our brains actually evolved in times where food scarcity, physical danger, and energy conservation was our only goal. So all these added inputs that we have nowadays are totally new. Okay, so essentially the brain has an energy budget. So in regards to some kind of percentages, the brain essentially accounts for around about 2% of our total body mass. Okay, but contrary to that, the brain actually consumes anywhere approximately up to about 20% of the body's total energy expenditure. So that proves that if it's 2% in mass and it takes up 20% of the expenditure, energy is expensive. So the brain is constantly seeking that efficiency, predictability, familiarity, and habitual behavior, and just an element of kind of homeostasis and that relative balance on a minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day basis. Okay. So kind of I've put in there the dual processing theory because when I've looked at this, kind of psychologists describe kind of two operating systems that we typically use, which is, well, we call it kind of a dual processing theory. So system one is typically fast, automatic, emotional, and habit driven. And then system two is a lot slower. It's a lot more deliberate and analytical, and it's a lot more effortful. So kind of what we would and our natural health behavior initially is going to require system two, right? So remember, system two is slow, deliberate, analytical, and kind of effortful, whereas kind of long-term success, in my opinion, kind of occurs when behavior will transition, or we spend a lot of time with that system one, which is kind of fast, automatic, and habit driven. Okay, so we're trying to take it away from kind of the kind of habits that kind of take us away from a goal and move it towards that system one where everything is a lot more subconscious and we do it without thinking. We shouldn't have to think or have two things up in the air when it comes to things like food choices or whether do we want to train. It's like, no, we have to train. And when we go into identity, which you guys know I love talking about in future slides, we understand how we want that kind of the thinking and the patterns around the behaviors that you guys are trying to elicit from a decision making standpoint to move you close to your goals. We want them to be fast and automated, essentially. So kind of the example I used a little bit earlier on is kind of that early stage is very much, and when you get into health and fitness, when there's you're spinning multiple plates, will typically be, should I go to the gym, for instance, using a working example. But as you get to that more advanced stage, if you do train in the morning, it's 6 a.m., I train. Okay, so it's trying to remove decisions, and a lot of you guys that I know very well from on here are already doing this sort of thing, but it's making those decisions automatic. And you don't, there's no time to think. It's what you do, it's how you live your life, and it's the person you're becoming. So for me, the key principle of this is the goal is not to become more disciplined. It's essentially, it's taking away from discipline and it all being automated and it become automatic. So using this theory, it's kind of just having to think about it now. What are the things that you know you should do to continue moving you forward that you naturally don't do, and they're a little bit more difficult? So again, that's where we use things like the habit tracker and those things within the coaching to kind of move things forward. And it's just being able to itemize, and like you guys know, I'm big on the self-auditing aspect and just being able to look and kind of into the looking glass and know and be very honest with yourself. Where am I cutting corners? Where am I not performing at my best? And it could be in any facet of the journey. And that's where we start to essentially make things that little bit more automatic and take out the role and requirement of that discipline we spoke of. So willpower for me, we spoke about it on, I spoke about it a couple of webinars and a couple of calls ago in regards to discipline and understanding how discipline will always fail when there's times of stress. So kind of using that same sort of theory, kind of willpower will always fail under prolonged periods of stress. So kind of our self-control functions, and this was something I was reading around Roy Bimeister again, is kind of our self-control functions are similar to a muscle. It can become fatigued, it can recover, it can be strengthened, but ultimately, in the big talking, the most important takeaway from that is it performs worse under stress. So kind of we know that kind of when we are under periods of stress, what typically goes first? You sleep. Okay, what goes secondary to that? Kind of food. Then kind of when we're tired, we haven't ate well, we haven't slept well, we renegade a little bit more on training. So it becomes that kind of self-fulfilling prophecy of kind of regression, simply because self-control, again, is probably a little bit more fatigued. So kind of what sort of things can create that kind of depletion? So for me, stress is a big one. So your work stress, things like parenting, financial concerns, even things like emotional conflict, whether it be through with your spouse and stuff, but most importantly, things like poor sleep. And then finally, everything we spoke about in previous slides is kind of that decision overload. Because we know, and I've tried to put it there so it explains a little bit better, but obviously the neurobiology of stress. So we know that when stress increases, typically cortisol rises, which then downregulates that prefrontal cortex activity, which again, from a decision-making, reduces that regulation. And then essentially that emotional brain takes over, which is typically going to produce that impulsivity. It might be emotional eating, things like procrastination and overwhelm, and typically kind of avoidance behavior. Because remember, I always say kind of, people don't choose to renegade on the diet, but it's safe and it's a self-protection mechanism to fall into the emotional chasing of things like dopamine from foods and those sort of things. So cortisol rises, downregulation that prefrontal cortex, and kind of that emotional response kind of typically dominates. Okay, so I'm a big believer, and those of you guys that heard me, I love training in the morning. I train personally in the morning myself. I try to get all my guys to train in the morning because we know that throughout the day, most of you have got busy jobs, busy working lives, and decision-making fails when there's more overload. And I find that the first 2 hours of the day, unless you've got a young family, which I understand kind of we'd have to change things around, but ultimately if you haven't and your kids are grown up, you haven't got kids, for instance, training first, you know, the first 2 hours of your day for, I believe, a man or a human is the only 2 hours that we have absolute control over, because you're fresh, circadian rhythms kind of working how it should be, and you've got nothing on your brain. Your day's not started, it's not work decisions, family decisions, life decisions, kind of, so you're not overloaded with a raft of information. So I always find, and I'm not the greatest trainer in the evening, Okay, and the example of that is typically people at 7 a.m. I'm definitely training tonight. Work happens, life happens, it gets to 7 p.m. It'll be like, oh, how many of you sat there and thought, oh, I can't really be asked to train tonight? And they've missed training. It happens, right? It's happened to me. It happens to everybody. Okay, for me, that's not laziness. That's not kind of something to be self-depreciating against. It's for me, it's predictable neurobiology because, again, stress throughout the day and cortisol has risen, the activity in that prefrontal cortex has decreased, and then essentially emotionally that emotional brain has took over and led to impattered decision making and decisions that go against the grain of what we're trying to achieve. So for me, it's, as I said very early in the talk, it's not about giving you guys excuses, but it's understanding that it's neurobiology, it's chemical. It's people aren't naturally lazy. People don't get fat because they want to be fat or unhealthy. It happens, but understanding this stuff allows you to kind of curate and create systems that kind of will safeguard you against that sort of stuff. And so essentially the key takeaway from this slide is you can't rely on motivation when your biology is pushing in the opposite direction. And just understanding that it is all a process and making sure that kind of how you curate your day, the systems you set up, your 16-hour audit, and all those sort of things run in line with you. And everybody sat on this call is going to be different. I've showed you guys my 16-hour audit before, but it's curating a day that minimizes the amount of decisions you make have to make, but most importantly, kind of reduces the stress of life. Because let's face it, in today's society, things are busy. Okay, stress exists, and kind of it's the pressure. Both here, the US, Canada, kind of with everything that's going on, the pressure's high, right? We live in quite a pressurized state. So minimizing that by curating what almost a skeleton of your perfect day looks like, it won't safeguard you against bad decisions, but ultimately it will help you lean into that autonomy a little bit more that allows you to kind of keep things moving forward. So moving into the next slide, we've got the habit loop. So essentially, I've titled it How to Make Success Automatic. Okay, so some of you may have heard of Charles Duhigg, but he's got basically a habit loop model. Okay, and every habit consists of kind of three parts. It exists of cue, routine, and reward. Okay, so essentially, kind of how that looks from a almost from a practical standpoint is a cue and your alarm sounds. Okay, so let's use that analogy of training first thing in the morning. Cue your alarm sounds. Okay, your routine is you put on your gym clothes straight away. We don't press snooze. We don't kind of roll over and think, oh, I'm just going to have 2 more minutes. You put your gym clothes on straight away. Reward, the dopamine release. So, from an accomplishment and an identity reinforcement standpoint, you've alarm's gone off, you've got up, you've got your gym clothes on, and you're ready to kind of get after it. Okay, so it's just understanding that every habit consists of a cue. And if you have got habits that kind of lead you down that kind of opposite path, is just use a little bit of this kind of methodology in regards to there is a cue for what you need to do, and then you kind of reinforce it with a routine and then a reward at the end of it as well. Okay, so I forget the name of Charles Duhigg's book, but he has got a book as well. But I'll try and link it and kind of find it for you. But again, in regards to books that work for habits, kind of one of the popular ones that you've probably got all heard of is kind of Atomic Habits by James Clear. That always talks about kind of operating with one task at a time. There was a book called The One or One Thing or One Thing, which was really good, which just kind of allows you to itemize just doing one thing at a time. But always good literature to read to kind of get you into good habits if they're not there as well. And then we have kind of the neuroscience of habit formation. So from a neurobiology standpoint, typically, repeated patterns and repeated behaviors become kind of encoded in the basal ganglia, which is this that central part of your brain. Okay. So the biology behind it is once this occurs, typically less conscious effort is required. So it becomes a lot more unconscious and subconscious, which is what we want, which I spoke about earlier, right? Okay. Decision making then starts to reduce. and then our behavior starts to become automatic. So you guys are going to have, well, I would, let's go back to the start of this process. You'll have had behaviors that were automatic, and they might not have been congruent with the goals that you've set. Okay, that doesn't make them bad. That just means kind of a habits. We spoke about it recently in regards to missing a day. Missing one day is a basic human error. Missing 3 or 4 days start to then become a pattern, and then missing a week, 2 weeks then starts to become a habit. So it's understanding coming into the process and even the depths of the process that you guys are in. So using TK as an example, like we've always spoke about him working late and kind of the lateness element of his job and having to work internationally and those sort of things. That's always been a thing. Okay, so kind of not all habits formation is going to be a good thing, but it's understanding how you can almost kind of move things around to facilitate building something that fits into your life. Because if TK's got calls till late in the evening, he's not going to be able to go to bed at 9 p.m. or 8:30 like me and Phil was talking about earlier on. So we have to kind of move things around to facilitate what works for you guys. And we have to make and create these structures that kind of make behavior automatic for you in your specific situation. If you just worked a 9-to-5 job, it'd be easy. But the reality is I've got a couple of my clients. I've got one guy that's pretty much on a different continent every single month. So he was in Australia last week. He's back in Seattle this week, and then he'll go somewhere else. So we have to kind of adjust to the moving parts. So it's understanding when we talk about operating systems, there's never just one operating system that fits all for your individual life. As we spoke about previously, there might be one on a Monday to Friday if you work Monday to Friday, then a different one for a weekend if it's family-based or kind of things change, and be another one for when you travel for work on business, and maybe another one for if you're on holiday socializing. So you start to build operating systems that you can lean into that gives you a set of non-negotiables that work in every situation that you find yourself. So why that pretty much leads me nicely into kind of why most people fail. So as we've said in previous talks and earlier on today, people typically rely on motivation, inspiration, and mood rather than leaning into the kind of repetition, consistency, environment, and most importantly, the identity of the person they want to be. Okay, so just by removing those decisions, I mean, I'm a stickler for eating the same things every day. So how we can kind of make that automatic is, a lot of people, and I have it with a lot of my clients, I get bored of eating the same breakfast every day. And I might be a bit cynical, but my response is, I don't care. Eat the same breakfast every day. I don't care, because ultimately you start to give an inch and people take a mile. You then start to have 2 different breakfasts, 3 different breakfasts, and then things slide because it becomes less automatic, because it gives you a choice. You then, oh, well, what do I want for breakfast today? Eat your eggs, your avocado, your sauerkraut. That's what you're having today, because it just takes that kind of pressure off it. Things like training at the same time. Okay. Preparing the clothes that you're going to wear for the gym if you do train in the morning and evening, or packing your bag the night before, those sort of things. Kind of, I do like meal structures. I'm a bit of a stickler for when it comes around food in regards to repetition, but I know that that works. I know that it works. And I believe that as humans now, like, we've been spoiled, right? One of the 10 deadly sins or 7 deadly sins is gluttony. And we walk down an aisle of food and we've got all these choices. That's all good and well, but I'm not a big believer in flexibility. I like rigidity. I'm a big believer when it comes to things like food, it's 95% fuel, 5% fun. I love food. I'm a big food and I love dining at nice restaurants, but it's not an everyday occurrence for me. It's not every 2 or 3 days. There's rigidity around my nutrition 95% of the time, but I still have freedom to enjoy the foods that are potentially non-congruent, but I don't feel guilty for it. But I think rigidity and using fixed meal structures is such a benefit. And it's important, especially in the early phase of trying to change habits, because we've lived a long period of our life where we can eat what I want. I wasn't the healthiest kid. I tell this story to everybody, but my grandma, bless her, when she was alive, she used to say, as a kid, I used to eat 3 things. I used to eat salad, I used to eat puddings, and I used to eat fruit. That's all I used to eat as a kid. Like, my palate was it wasn't very sparse. It was salads, fruit, and puddings, which are 3 random different things, but that's all I used to eat. But again, kind of you break those habits down and you create a little bit kind of predictability, which is going to be important, especially in the early phase. Same with weighing food. I've spoke about this before, but ultimately people that start, oh, I'm not weighing my food. But you need to begin with, because it creates autonomy. I've done this for 20 odd years. I could eyeball 200 grams of raw chicken, 200 grams of rice. I could eyeball that now, cooked and uncooked, because I've been doing it for so long. But you have to go for a period of it to change your thinking around it, because guaranteed, fresh into this process, and those of you guys that haven't weighed food before, if I asked you to weigh out, I don't know, 8 ounces of rice, you can be damn sure there's going to be 10 and a half to 11 and a half ounces of rice here, which again, from a calorie perspective, shoots you over, which doesn't put you in a calorie deficit or maintenance, and essentially increases the risk of you maintaining, putting on body fat and not moving forward to your body composition goals. So kind of the rule here is, if that behavior does require daily negotiation, adherence is eventually going to decline. And it's a slippery slope. You let one little thing slip in once, twice, three times. And again, remember, it goes from a basic human error or a choice to a pattern to a habit. And I'm not a big believer in kind of it takes 3 months, 4 months for habits to build. It can take a lot longer than that. Certain habits can take a lot longer if you've had 15, 20 years of unhealthy choices. It can take a lot shorter than that. But the decision, the great thing is, that we as humans are in control. Every decision we make, from a food, a training, and a life perspective, is we are the kind of key holders of that. And every decision we make within our life, professional, personal, and kind of physical, we're essentially, it's a decision that we get to make. No one will make it for us, which is, again, is a power play for me, because you either you do or you don't. I will or I won't. There's no kind of gray area in between. So just taking that out of it and creating a little bit more autonomy is important. Okay. So in regards to, I've put the highest return on investment behavioral tool. So with a guy called Peter Golwitz's, that did a lot of research around implementation intentions. Okay. Which are kind of if and then behavioral scripts. So kind of, this is all internal dialogue and self-talk. Okay. So you know me, I'm not a big fan of the word can't. It was banned in my house for a number of years. My son will tell you that, kind of. But how he scripted it with his kind of implementation intentions is, rather than saying I'll try to exercise, you create an affirmation more than anything, which is, if it's 6 p.m. on a Monday, then I go directly to the gym. So you take the decision out of it, and it's not, you give yourself room. I always say, if somebody says try, you failed already, because it kind of gives you that get out of free jail card. Okay, I'm going to try to do this, because you've already thought about, I might do, but I might not. And the minute that I might not, when shit starts to hit the fan a little bit and stress ramps up and something happens, guess where you're going to lean to? You're going to lean to that kind of, oh, I'll just push that to there, and it becomes the bottom of the pile. I talk to my guys all the time, and we're all very bad at it, is putting ourselves first. We serve everybody else before ourselves, whether it be family, whether it be colleagues, whether it be work. We typically have become very good at being unselfish, whereas I prompt my guys very quickly to be selfish, because the important thing is, kind of, if you can become the best version of yourself and lean into that, you're going to show up as the best version of yourself for those that you care about, you in your kind of circle, your environment, and those sort of things. And the reality with those implementation intentions, they work because they remove that uncertainty. They eliminate that kind of negotiation that you have with yourself. Most importantly, it reduces that cognitive load. And it just allows us to kind of automate those behavioral responses. So if I wanted to use examples from those kind of, and I'll use kind of all the main things. So nutrition. If I become hungry between meals, then I eat we've got a prepared protein snack. That's what I have. Or kind of, we have a snack inlaid. From an exercise perspective, the affirmation that you'll make to yourself, if work runs late tonight, then I still complete my workout. Whatever time I finish, I will be in the gym 30 minutes, 45 minutes after my last meeting finishes, an example. alcohol, again, for me is often quite a non-negotiable. If I'm socializing, I'll order sparkling water first or water first. And I'm going to choose not to drink. This is my drink of choice, and this is what I'm going to order first and which is going to stay with me. When somebody's stressed, kind of if you start to feel yourself getting a little bit sympathetic, dominant, and overwhelmed, take a 10-minute walk, nip to the toilet, have a wee, do some breath work, kind of just calm that system down. So it's using those positive affirmations, understanding first and foremost and being honest where your limitations are or your limiters are, and then using positive affirmations to kind of rejig the wheel a little bit. Okay. So I just put a few of the research findings on there as well. So kind of from an implementation intention standpoint, they've significantly increased exercise adherence, improved dietary compliance, better medication adherence from a supplement perspective, and most importantly, enhance long-term behavior change. Remember, everything in this game that we're currently in and we're sat talking about is delayed gratification. It's not something that's going to happen in 1 week, 2 weeks, 12 weeks. The results and the longevity aspect of what you're trying to achieve, we're trying to extend them to end of life, right? For the rest of your life. So the reality of this behavior change isn't for a short period. It hasn't got an expiry date. It's allowing you to live for as long as possible, as healthy as possible. So there's not really an expiry date on it. So everything that we do, every decision we make today, tomorrow, the next day, is all delayed gratification. And the principle, I think, from this slide is ultimately, one, never go shopping when you're hungry, but never make decisions during moments of kind of emotional vulnerability and kind of when you're in a high stress state, kind of, because typically you're not going to be able to lean into that discipline and things are just going to be that little bit harder. So again, a good guy to look at if you wanted to have a look at his research, but Peter Golwitz's kind of research around implementation intentions is good alongside the stuff I spoke to you about a little bit earlier on. And one of the key points, which again, I feel like I'm constantly banging on about, is environment dictates everything, right? So your environment and the design behind that kind of beats motivation. So for me, kind of, it was, what was his name? Richard, I think it's pronounced Thaler, I think, kind of, he had a behavioral economics and nudge theory. Basically, it demonstrated and kind of what the paper was about is that we as humans are profoundly influenced by our environment. Okay, I'll try and get the link to that because I've got it somewhere on my laptop, but I've got that much stuff on there. But essentially what Richard Thaler kind of proved was environment is everything. You guys will know, he said you are, I forget his name as well, kind of you are a product of the five people that you spend most of your time with. So from an environment perspective, and I believe environment dictates everything. If you're in the wrong environment, kind of, not bad things happen, but ultimately you don't live the quality of life you want to. So kind of, for me, kind of environment and curating and being able to be strong enough, because we've all grown up in kind of friendship circles, or we've got long-term friends that, with the greatest respect, and I mean this with a massive amount of love, don't serve us. I call them energy vampires, right? They're people in life that when you talk to them, no matter whether you phone them, whether it's 100 degrees outside, they've just won the lottery, kind of whatever's happened, they've always found something to moan about. Literally everything's negatively tinged. And kind of, I still have those people in my life, but I kind of limit contact. And I walk into those conversations with expectations, and I know that they're not going to last very long. So kind of, I think just curating your environment and anything that doesn't lead you close to the goal or towards the person you want to be is going to be super important. So environmental factors that kind of can affect behavior. We all know, and I'm a big believer in kind of, you take me to an all-you-can-eat kind of food place, and I'm 10,000 calories deep before I even breathe. Okay, I've got the genetic snip that doesn't tell me when I fall, but I'm also 6'4" and I love my food. But things like larger plates increase calorie consumption. Visible food increases calorie consumption. Kind of one of the biggest things I think in today's society is kind of convenience, right? You can go anywhere and find typically the food. There's a reason why supermarkets typically kind of have all the, let's say, the chocolate and the sweets at the end on offer is from a synapse standpoint and from a kind of cognitive standpoint, you can see them very quickly and it drives up that urge for dopamine. So kind of the problem in today's society is that increased convenience will typically increase behavioral frequency and increase friction, or what I believe is abstinence, kind of decreases behavior. So again, when somebody feels like they're, I'm a big believer when it comes to food is nothing's banned. Like I say to my guys often, you can eat what you want. Okay, if you want to go and smash a pizza, you want to go and down 10 apple martinis, go and do it. Okay, but it wants to be a choice. Does that serve you or does it not serve you? So I don't like to ban foods. There's no good or bad food, right or wrong food. There's food that's conducive to your goal and food that's non-conducive to your goal. And what I want you to get better at is making choices and eliminating the non-conducive food on your own terms. I'm not here to tell you and dictate to you, you can't eat this because, or you can't eat this for X amount of time, because that then puts an expiry date on it. Whereas what we try to do is build mechanisms in there where there's not cheat meals or cheat days and all those sort of things is, and we don't reward kind of positive progress with foods. What we're trying to create, and I believe I'm trying to create, is a new normal. It's removing the old normal foods, but most importantly, everything becomes a choice. If you do eat non-conducive food, we don't berate ourselves for it and feel like we failed and go into that kind of mindset of kind of, oh my God, I've ruined everything. You haven't. But slowly but surely, when the progress happens and people start to feel better, they feel energized, they're sleeping better, output gets a lot better. Naturally, they start to kind of deviate away from those foods because they understand, and from a habit formation perspective, that it doesn't positively affect them. So for me, it's not bastardizing food and kind of putting them into good or bad camps, right or wrong. There's no such thing. The good thing, going back to what I said a couple of slides ago, is we have a choice. And what I like my guys to do alongside me is kind of make choices that serve them and don't hinder them. Because the reality is, most of the time when we choose the food that's non-congruent, it's very much an emotional response and it's dopamine derived because we know it's going to taste great. But how many times when you've had that food, do you eat it? You think, it tastes great going down. And then you feel like shit, not an hour after because of the sodium content, or the morning after you feel like you've got a hangover when you've had a really strong period of food. And then you have, let's say, some takeaway food, you feel worse the day after. So for me, everything becomes a choice, which then moves us nicely into kind of the behavior equation, right? So behavior equals motivation, ability, and most importantly, environment. Okay, so the practical applications around that is from a nutrition standpoint is having your meal prep days. So again, Sunday and Wednesdays are typically my meal prep days, but I'm in a position where I work from home. So there's certain meals that I'll prepare every single day just because I like to, and I like my food fresh, but my, let's say my beef mince, kind of, I've seasoned my chicken up and kind of cooked that each meal, but it's all done. It's all in the fridge. It's all ready to go. Okay. Keep protein visible at all times. You know, protein is the most important macronutrient alongside fiber that we want you to kind of keep high from a muscle preservation and all the positive aspects of protein. Remove trigger foods. Bless my son, kind of, he's 21 and kind of we don't have anything in the house. Like there's no snack drawer, there's no treat drawer. He probably hates me for it, but I know that if it's around it, I'm only human. If I'm tired, I'm stressed, I'm going to reach for, I'm a bit of a cookie monster. I do like cookies and I have them infrequently, but kind of if they're there, I can't just buy cookies and have portion out one a day. If there's a pack of cookies in the house and they come in fours and fives for those of you guys that likes cookies, I go to the cupboard and get one. I sit back down, I'm just going to have one. It's 30 minutes and all those cookies are gone. But I've built them into my plan because I do like cookies. And as I've said to you guys before, it's very infrequent, but removing trigger foods and kind of still bringing them in intermittently when you're in a position where you've got to the level you want to get, I don't think is a bad thing. Okay, they're not going to kill you. Okay, so kind of building that in where things are good as well. And again, from a nutrition perspective, just using something like smaller plates and not having a big plate. Fun fact, my grandma, when I moved out of home, I used to go back to hers every Sunday for a Sunday dinner. Her and my granddad's plate was this big. My plate was one of those oval plates that was literally twice the size of her plates. And you can be sure, being my grandma, she would fill it up every Sunday when I was a lot younger. So yeah, use smaller plates. That's an anecdotal, and that's a reminder to me rather than to you guys as well. So things like exercise, as I said earlier, kind of laying out clothes the night before. Again, have a regular training time and schedule sessions. It's not going to be possible to hit every single one, but ultimately looking at and curating your week, you know on a Sunday kind of what your week's looking like, whether it consists of a little bit of travel, but schedule those sessions into your 16-hour order and don't deviate. Again, I always say to people, missing training, there's only two things that allow them to miss training: is a medical emergency or the family. When it comes to work, and kind of sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult, but if your working day is 9 to 5, you don't schedule any training within 9 to 5, because if a meeting pops in or something happens, that's not you creating certainty. It'll either be 7 till 8:30 or 6:30 till 8 or 5:30, 6 to 7:30. That creates certainty. If you work 9 to 5 and you schedule, oh, I'm going to train this day because I've got a gap on Thursday, and it's Monday, the likelihood of a meeting being booked in at that time on Thursday increases, which again takes that certainty out, and then you've got to find somewhere else to put it. So schedule your sessions in advance. You guys kind of has got us as coaches as well, but lean into us, allow us to help you create your schedule, stay accountable to us. I get my guys to send me their kind of 5 to 7 day audit of what the working days look like with a lot of my guys, especially in the infancy of their journey with me, because it allows me to check in with them. Have you trained today? Because you're not going to hit everything on the nose in the first part of your process. You're not, like, you're only human. We're trying to change and making it this kind of autonomous, but ultimately kind of using what I describe as accountability partners, but using us as coaches to lean into as well. And then something like sleep. So removing phones, kind of, or reducing that light exposure in an evening, or kind of having an old alarm, or if you have got an alarm on your phone, put it on the other side of your room so you actually have to get up to turn the alarm off rather than just roll over, press snooze, and then inadvertently roll back over and fall back to sleep. And most importantly, which I often kind of bang on about, is establish fixed sleep routines. Set a bedtime, set a wake time, and don't deviate from that, barring something that happens in the evening. But 5 to 6 days out of 7, you're in bed at the same time. And kind of, we're trying to kind of naturally create that circadian rhythm, which again, we know of all the positive things that happen with sleep from a rest and recovery standpoint. And like I said earlier, kind of the insight for this slide is, you guys and guys often blame themselves for what is typically kind of an environmental problem. So I'm not alleviating us as blamed, because we've still got to take ownership and responsibility for the habits that we've created. But again, the time that it's been under has created almost a neurobiological process. So it's time to start rewire, using, as we said before, neuroplasticity to rewire that a little bit. And just the last slide, last couple of slides, kind of looking at identity. So kind of, goals will typically fail because goals focus on outcomes, okay? Whereas identity for me kind of typically focuses on becoming. So I think it's great having a goal. So I'm going to contradict this last slide a little bit, this penultimate slide a little bit, in regards, we still want X amount of weight loss. We still want X amount of kind of fat loss from a body fat percentage. We still want X amount of putting muscle on. We still want that as a number. But ultimately, I want it to be tied into your identity, because if it's tied into your identity, that will come as a byproduct of that. So we're still having strict goals of putting on 10 pounds of muscle, losing 20 pounds of fat, being sub 12% body fat. But if we start to kind of, from an identity perspective, identify as disciplined and the person, the Paul, the Phil that you want to be, the actions that you instill are going to lean towards that as well. So kind of still having your traditional goal, but changing your identity alongside the process of that. So kind of understanding that kind of long-term adherence occurs when behaviors align with primarily perception and how you feel about yourself, how you see yourself. And that's going to be super important. Perception is a big thing for me. And one of the questions I used to ask when I had a gym here in the UK was, initially when people used to come in and I got familiar when I did the onboarding and stuff is kind of, and I would ask it relatively frequently, if you were stood in the mirror naked with yourself now, what would be the three words you'd choose to describe yourself? And more often than not, it'd be negatively tinged. It'd be superlatives like horrible, disgusting, and these sort of words. And I used to rebuff that by saying, so are you a terrible husband or wife? Are you a terrible son, daughter, father, etc.? Are you a terrible friend? Like, no. I'm like, so the superlatives that you're using to describe yourself, like horrible and disgusting, like you've tied a identity to it that's not actually factually true. You're just overweight. You're just overweight. You're carrying a extra layer of body fat. That's it. Okay, you're not a horrible person. You're not disgusting. You're literally just carrying 20 pounds, 30 pounds of excess body fat. So understanding perception is super important, and kind of self-perception is one of those big things in how you feel about yourself. You might not be where you want to be, but if you start to act and behave like that person that's 10% body fat, 12% body fat, 20 pounds lighter with an extra 10 pounds of muscle on, you start to become that. Okay, so we as humans will often seek consistency between identity, beliefs, and actions. Okay, and just knowing that kind of how you see yourself at every workout, like kind of for me, behavior will cast a vote. So each workout, as I say to you guys, every single person on this call today, you're an athlete. Okay, you value your health. Okay. Each good night's sleep, I prioritize my performance. It's not, oh, I'm missing this or I'm missing out on this. How you talk to yourself and your perception of what you're doing is going to be super important, which is going to lead you forward. And just making sure kind of you, like, it's not what, the question to ask yourself is not what do you want, okay? It's who am I becoming? And again, the goals that I have, what does Dan of 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the line, semi-retired Dan, or kind of 10 pounds on, 220 pounds, whatever it is, kind of who am I becoming and how do I behave like that on a day-to-day basis and what does that look like? And you'll find often when there's a lack of progress, there's going to be a mismatch between kind of goals and actions. And it's all going to be down to perception and identity. Okay, and it's okay in certain periods of your life, kind of when shit hits the fan and stress is high, that I often said to clients, they will come in and say, I want to lose 10 pounds, and their actions in those first 4 weeks kind of weren't very good. And they wouldn't stick to anything. They'd be the Monday to Friday, lose 2 pounds, gain 3 pounds at the weekend. So we used to have a difficult conversation of, at this moment in time, there's certain things that you're not willing to sacrifice to reach that goal. And that's okay. So when you say, I want to lose 10 pounds, I used to rebuff it by saying, no, you don't. And they'd look at me shocked and it'd become a little bit of a back and forward. Yes, I do. No, I don't. I'm like, but your actions don't dictate that. So the first thing to do is admit that what you're currently doing and what you're not willing to sacrifice will deter you from achieving your goals. And going back to that kind of self-honesty aspect, I think that's always super important. And essentially, every behavior that you elicit is going to cast a vote to this new version of you or not. Okay. So identity, for me, sustainable behavior change is essentially changing that identity of the person you see yourself and who you want to become. And then the last slide, I've called it the Muscle Intelligence Anti-Decision Fatigue System, which it sounded cool when I wrote it. It don't look as cool now. It's actually in a slide. So apologies if it sounds, it looks a little bit cheesy, but I'm going to roll with it anyway. But step one, audit every decision you make. Okay, so feel free to take a photo of this or kind of write these down. Step two, eliminate unnecessary decisions. Three, automate nutrition. Step four, schedule training. Step five, use implementation intentions. Step six, design your environment. Step seven, build identity-based habits. And then step eight, trust systems over motivation. And I feel that that just kind of forms a nice kind of sliding scale of just, I think for you guys that are on this call and those of you guys that are going to listen back to this, tick those all off, kind of. Are you doing each one of those steps? Have you got them backwards? Are you trying to kind of trust systems over motivation before building identity-based habits? So just use it as almost a little bit of a sliding scale to just start to automate and just kind of tie in the areas of your life. Remember what I always say to you guys, it's progress over perfection. Every single person on this call, myself included, isn't perfect. Okay, we all have kind of levers that kind of just need to be twisted a little bit. We all have kind of weak points, but we're only as strong as our weakest point, right? And understanding those limiters and making them strengths then make something else a limiter. And it's just that constant progression, and be excited that not something's not perfect. Be excited to lean into a new habit and be able to be honest with yourself about the things that you say you're going to do and commit to. And this doesn't even have to be in this physical realm. It can be decisions around catching up with family, visiting friends, work. How I present these is I want to get you guys thinking more than anything and understand that kind of these sort of methodologies can be applied to everything. And then just remember, kind of, in my opinion, highly successful people, they're not more disciplined than you. They're not more motivated. They're not more resilient. Okay, we spoke about the four resilience before. All they have on you, and think about some of you guys might be the absolute top of your field. Let's look at it from a work perspective. But think about the person that's top of the field that you work in. They're not more disciplined. They just have better systems, better environments, better habits, and most importantly, fewer decisions. Okay, so the final thought of today is kind of you're not going to kind of rise to the level of your motivation. You're always going to kind of be limited and fall at the level of your system. So everything is automated. You know, I'm a bit OCD with the detail and kind of everything being systemized, but it works. It works. The rinse and repeat theory. So you're not going to rise to the level of your motivation, because eventually through life and everything, motivation is going to wane sometimes. But you will fall to the level of your system. So hope that's kind of been of benefit to a few of you guys. Let me just stop sharing now. But kind of, obviously, I'll open the floor up now to any questions. If anybody wants to ask anything, how was that? Feel free to unmute yourself and kind of ask anything you've got on. No questions, guys. How did you find that? Did anyone kind of listen to that and think there's a couple of things in there that kind of potentially they can lean into and kind of what they can kind of be working on?
Yeah, there was part of that where you were reading my mail. I was out of work for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And during that time, I had just no discipline or willpower at all, you know, during that mall. And so now it's getting back in the swing of it and everything, and, you know, just, you know, getting the habits repeatable again and all that. That was a good discussion also about eating the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Because I do like a little bit of variety of the food that I eat, all that kind of stuff. But I see your point on it, Liz.
I look at that, Phil, is because, again, like for me, I'm very boring, so I'll eat the food same day. But how I work it in regards to eating the food same day and how it'd work for you if you do like variety is you can have three to five choices for every meal. But what I always say to my guys that like you, because it's not wrong or right, is eat the same thing for 7 days then change the menu for the next 7 days, or eat it for 14 days and change the menu. What I find is kind of just doing it for a period of time. For me as a coach, it just allows me to guarantee. So if we're looking at weight loss, for instance, I'm looking at trying to get off anywhere between 1.1 and 2.2 pounds off you a week as an optimal amount of weight to be losing to ensure that we're retaining as much tissue as possible. And if you're eating the same things, I can pretty much guarantee that if we hit everything on the nose, you're going to be losing 2.2 kind of pounds a week, if that makes sense. But also for yourself, it just takes the thinking out of it for you as well, Phil, rather than you thinking, what am I going to eat? Because the minute you have to think what to eat or what am I going to have for X meal, I'm not saying that you will deviate, but if that happens over time and that's repeated, at some point you will not fall off a wagon, but you'll choose something a little bit more conducive. So if you're a little bit more stressed, if you have been out of work and kind of there's no structure, things can go south very quickly because you've got more time on your hands, right? And I'm sure you experienced this when you was out of work. Whereas if you had those systems in built, kind of what you're able to do is feel a little bit more in control, because being out of work, I can imagine you felt a little bit out of control, and everything just felt like a little bit more of a slog, right?
A little bit, yeah. It was. Yeah.
And how's things in that realm now? Are things picked up and stuff?
Oh, it's great. You know, I actually do. I'm back at work. It's a small international company. They're scheduling meetings earlier and earlier, so I'm coming up with systems to ensure that I have my workout time and all that.
Yeah, 100%. And kind of for you, like we say, Phil, kind of you might find, and like I've said to you a little bit earlier on in the talk, is what the 16-hour audit for you won't necessarily work for me. Obviously, being in the UK, most of my calls to the US and Canada start around lunchtime. So around about 12, I've got quite a few European and Australian clients, which are more in the morning. But the shift for me was kind of working a little bit later. And all I've done is I've curated my 16-hour audit around my day. So now that you've got calls a little bit earlier, and if you're unable to work out, it might be the middle of the day. That's where you get your break, or later on. But you just curate and you just keep refining and understanding. If something changes, your 16-hour audit changes, but it becomes repetitive. It becomes consistent because you just allow to, and it's being rigid with a sprinkle of flexibility in there, which if something moves or something changes, you make sure you resonate it to allow you to keep that consistency.
Right on, brother.
Yeah. Perfect. Cool. Perfect. Cool. How about you, TK? Was that okay, buddy? Did that ring any bells for you?
Yeah, in all honesty, it's the consistency. It's like the weekends is when I like to go out to the West End and try new food or whatever. And then like Friday night, I sleep super late, and then Saturday as well. So it's that doesn't help the kind of consistency aspects of things. Yeah. I can, like, throughout the week, I'm able to eat the same food, no problem. My meal prep and all that, everything is nicely portioned in containers. Every morning I just grab some out of the freezer and chuck it in the microwave during lunchtime. But during the weekend is where I really kind of switch it up a little bit.
Well, yeah, but I like that, mate. And like I said to you earlier, kind of, I don't think that's a bad thing. If that's the nature of your life, like one of my guys, he likes to socialize. One of his highest, when you look at his behavior, he's an extrovert. He likes to socialize. So for you, if you know that you like to have a meal in the West End and stuff, and spend time with friends that weekend, build that in. So like I said about operating systems, what I do with yourself, and I'm sure Gav's done this with you anyway, your Monday to Friday is rigid. And within the Saturday and Sunday, there's still an operation in laid, but with a little bit more creative freedom, maybe afternoons, evenings, if that's the time that you go out and you're going to West End, or it might be brunch, whatever it is. I know that he's coming up to see you this weekend, but you still have an operating system in laid where there's a set of non-negotiables around those times. Things are still perfect. There's still a consistency. And if you're going to bed later on a Friday and a Saturday, I know you probably won't, but kind of your sleep schedule changes. So you might be in bed for, let's say for you, it's 11 p.m. on a Monday to Friday with you working a little bit later. You might set that principle of it might be 12 or 1 a.m., let's say, at a weekend. But ultimately, we sleep a little bit later, that alarm moves back. And it's not ideal, but you start to curate a set of, it's not, and remember, nothing's perfect, but it works for you. So a weekend from a food perspective, and Gav's probably spoke to you about this, I know, but your food choices change, and it might be, I know you're in a bit of a build at the minute as well. It might be creating a little bit of buffer, so it allows you a little bit more creative freedom around those meals, because it doesn't mean that you failed the plan. It's just a slightly different operating system is required, because environment changes at weekend and there's a bit more socializing, because that pours into you, right? If you enjoy socializing, I said to my guy, I don't want to take that away from you because you'll be miserable. So it's understanding how you just create slightly different operating systems for whatever environment. And for you, it might be Monday to Friday and then the weekend. As long as you're in bed by 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, not partying on a Sunday night if you've got to get up early on Monday.
not so much partying. It's more like I'm a huge introvert. So if I like eat the same food on the weekend as well, then that means I'll literally just stay home all weekend as well.
Yeah.
So
no, I love that, mate. And being an introvert myself, I'm happy with this dog, I'm happy Monday to Sunday, so I have to force myself. So I get that. I do understand that. So I think that's great. And the reality is, mate, you don't go out partying. The places that you go to eat, it's not, you're not going to a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken. You eat at good places where kind of, and like you and Gav do, you still eat protein-based and those sort of things. So it's not like you're deviating from a plan. All it requires is a slight operation system change, because it's a different environment and situation to your Monday and Fridays as well. But thank you. But as always, guys, thank you for taking an hour out of your day to listen to me today. For those of you guys that are listening to this on repeat, I hope you took some good information from today. Obviously, any questions that you guys have, please fire them across. And I look forward to seeing you guys all soon. But have a great day wherever you are in the world. And I look forward to speaking to you all again soon.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
It's a great presentation.